taking testosterone most of the time does cause infertility. So if you're getting worked up for fertility, this is where we go over the options that we're going to be discussing today. And there's multiple ways in which you can take these things to increase your testosterone and preserve your fertility.
This is the Man Up Podcast, the doctor's guide to men's health. Each week on our podcast, Dr. Justin Dubin and Dr. Kevin Chu discuss various topics in men's health. Sometimes they are joined by specialists of the field. You have questions that you are too afraid to ask. We have the answers. This week, our episode is titled Future Fertility, Navigating HCG and Clomid, Your Guide to Preserving Reproductive Health. I'm Dr. Kevin Chu, and I'm joined as always with my co-host, Dr. Justin Dubin. Justin, you got to spend a good night in Miami together, huh?
Yes, we did. Last week, got to catch up. Shout out to Dr. Ramasamy and the Ramasamy team, bringing a lot of us together. Got to see some really great people catch up, and it was awesome seeing you. It was awesome seeing everyone. We had a good time.
Yeah, it was, it was actually University of Miami hosts this annual urology kind of conference to, you know, kind of catch up on the latest stuff in all things urology. And so it was good seeing a lot of our old, colleagues and to hang out and discuss. It's always a good time.
Absolutely. Oh, it's always nice when people, get to come out and see us in Miami. So, I mean, I kind of like the idea of going somewhere, but I'm glad that everyone comes to me. It's actually a lot easier.
Well, Miami's always going to be one of those places high on the list where conferences are held, you know, good weather, oh, yeah. Good restaurants, Justin Dubin's there, so you know.
Yeah, that's definitely
there's a lot of attraction.
But it was good. Anyways, it was good.
Yeah. So let's before we kind of jump into the topic for the week, give me your picks for this week. NFL playoffs, man. We got some good games.
This is hard. But
and not who you want, who you think is gonna win.
I think the Ravens are gonna do it. I know I'm an idiot for you know, going against Patrick Mahomes. Mahomes is just unbelievable. But I think the Ravens are the real deal. Lamar is fantastic. The defense, the offense, you know, I lived in Baltimore. I'm on the Ravens. So, yeah, I'm going Ravens there. And I think the second game's hard. They just announced that Deebo Samuels is playing. And when Deebo plays for the Niners, they're pretty much unstoppable.
Yeah.
So as long as he's healthy, unfortunately, I think the Niners win. I think they're the better team, but I want the Lions to win.
The whole nation.
I want the Lions to win.
I feel like the whole nation, except for maybe like California, is just pulling for Detroit to pull that upset, you know?
Absolutely. Who do you like?
Well, you know, it hurts me to say it because I'm a, you know, devout Steelers fan, but
yes.
I do think the Ravens, they just look unstoppable. Like, I don't Absolutely. Know how you stop Lamar Jackson. He can throw it, he can run it. He's got the sense. So, you know, I think the Ravens will beat the Chiefs, even though Mahomes has that, like, you know, lucky factor. And I know the NFL really wants Taylor Swifties to, you know, join in and watch the Super Bowl. But I think the Ravens got it. And, yeah, I think you know, my mind is saying that probably the Niners will probably pull it out and there will be a Niners-Ravens, you know, Super Bowl.
So yeah. I think that's probably the way it's going to go, but I would like the Lions to be in there.
Yeah, shout out Jared Goff and fellow Cal Bear. You know, we just produce good quarterbacks. That's a fact.
He was probably the last one.
He is the last one. I don't think the Cal Bears have a football team. I don't even know. I haven't checked.
Oh, so sad. It's so sad, but there was at least they were good when you were there. That's all you can ask for. It was a good ride while you were there.
It's good ride, Marshawn. You know. Some good players, but, you know, I think they're joining the ACC now. It's such a weird conference now.
I didn't even know the ACC. I mean, obviously I do know the ACC exists because UMiami's in it, but
yeah, I think Cal's going to play UMiami now. Like,
are they the only West Coast team who's going to be in the ACC?
No, I think Stanford's in the ACC now too.
Oh, wow. What a disaster for them.
That stuff's going to be temporary.
That's a disaster. I mean, the ACC sucks. Let's be honest. The ACC is terrible. It's all about the Big Ten, baby. Big Ten for life.
Yeah, some people would say the SEC. Sorry for our Southeast listeners.
Well, who won? We are the dominant Big Ten, baby. Big Ten's what it's all about.
smart Jim Harbaugh. He's like, I'm jetting out of here on a high note.
Yeah, no, can't blame him. But all right, man. So what are we talking about today's episode?
So two medications that a lot of our listeners may have kind of heard word of mouth or just from, you know, browsing the internet is these medications called HCG and Clomid. Clomid can sometimes be known as clomiphene citrate, or we kind of touch a little bit on a similar medication called N-clomiphene citrate. And these are medications that are used to actually boost the testosterone that you make in your body. Right, Justin?
Oh, yeah. So these are ways in which we can innately increase our testosterone. And I think one of the things that, you know, this is a natural segue from the first episode or the last episode that we talked about everything about taking testosterone, which we really highlighted that point where taking testosterone can cause, and most of the time does cause, infertility. So then if you are someone who is worked up for fertility, and one of the problems that we have is that we know that you need good testosterone to create good quality sperm. So if you're getting worked up for fertility and you end up having low testosterone, or you were worked up for low testosterone just because you're symptomatic, but you want to preserve your fertility, and testosterone is clearly not the option for you, you know, this is where we go over what those options for naturally improving your testosterone levels, naturally improving your, hopefully preserving your sperm quality, or maybe potentially even improving it. So these are the options that we're going to be discussing today. And I think the most important thing you can understand here is that testosterone is not your only option if you have low testosterone. There are alternatives. We're going to be discussing them today. There's multiple ways in which you can take these things to increase your testosterone and preserve your fertility.
That's a fantastic message. And, you know, this week, and Justin, I'm sure as well too, you know, I've seen so many patients who are in their reproductive years that happen to have low testosterone and are symptomatic, you know?
Yeah.
And a lot of them come and say like, hey, look, yeah, you know, I saw my lab test, low testosterone. So, you know, I want to get on testosterone therapy. And so this episode is so good and so important because it's really highlighting the importance of why you know, testosterone therapy should not be the first line for men in their reproductive years.
Yeah. And once again, I'm just highlighting this idea that when you're talking to your local healthcare provider and they're telling you that you have low testosterone, if they're offering you only testosterone and you're interested in preserving your fertility, you have to ask. You got to ask. And if they're not being offered something, there's other people out there who will. And I can't highlight that enough, because at the end of the day, you know, your life goal, whether it's you want to be a parent at some point, can potentially be compromised by going this route or not being educated on this route. Kevin and I, he's in LA, I'm in Miami. We see this all the time. We see guys who didn't know that testosterone causes infertility. They weren't told. They've been trying for a year or two, and we take them off. And usually we can accomplish the goal, but it's not often a pleasant experience for the user, because the longer you're on testosterone, the harder it is to come back and recover both your sperm and your ability to create testosterone, which you probably weren't making in the first place very well. So these are just really important things to, you know. And I think the other thing that's important to understand is, unlike testosterone, true exogenous testosterone, Clomid, HCG, these are things that when you stop them, you go back to your baseline. You're really not causing a true deficiency in atrophy of your testicles or anything like that.
Yep, those are all really good points. So I think we should just kind of jump into it. Ready to go?
Let's do it. All right, guys, thanks for listening. As always, enjoy the episode. Please subscribe to our YouTube. We're really trying to push our YouTube content. We got the cameras. We look great. We're cool. We're dressed not in scrubs anymore. Trying to be very approachable.
Maybe that's why our YouTube numbers are low.
Maybe. No, but now we're just guys. Now we're just guys like just talking without scrubs. So I'm wearing a hat, backwards hat. I'm cool. So if you're not listening, if you're just listening, just check out my backwards hat. So subscribe to the YouTube channel and check out our website. Questions, comments, you can always email us as well or find us on all our social media at The Man Up Pod. Download, subscribe, iTunes, Spotify. Always appreciate it, guys. As men's health specialists, we know guys are shaving their balls. Yeah, we examine a lot of you, so we literally see it, but we also have the data showing it, too.
That's right. According to research, over 85% of men trim their pubes. Not only that, but research shows that over 70% of women prefer a partner with at least partially trimmed pubic hair.
So guys, we know you're trimming the edges, and we know that most women prefer you manscape. So if you're going to shave your balls, why not use the best men's grooming kit around? We're talking about Manscaped.
With the Manscaped Performance Package 4.0, you get the Lawnmower 4.0 with their all-new skin-safe electric trimmer that protects your balls from getting those cuts we've all had in the past. You also get the Weed Whacker 2.0 for trimming your nose and ear hairs. And let me tell you guys, we all need to do a better job of this.
Yep, that's right. Kevin and I both have the Performance Package, and we really love it. Manscaping has never been easier for us. And for our listeners, we have a special promotion. Go to manscaped.com and enter promo code MANUP and get 20% off your first purchase.
Go get your Manscaped products today. Your balls and your partner will thank you.
All right, so Justin, today we're going to talk about two medications that are commonly used for some of our patients, especially ones who want to maintain their reproductive potential but have low testosterone. These two medications are HCG, human chorionic gonadotropin, and clomiphene citrate, right, Justin? These are two commonly used things for patients if they have low T and, you know, we're trying to work with them through the fertility process.
Right, right. Once again, the thing to stress here is that if you are, you know, hypogonadal, meaning you have low testosterone and you're trying to either maintain your fertility or have a current child, you know, taking testosterone is not an option for you. You know, the majority of patients, I think there's more recent literature that within 6 months of taking testosterone, about 75% of guys have zero sperm in your ejaculate. And you have to remember that it's not just, you know, something easy for everyone to recover your sperm. About 90% of guys, it takes about a year once you're off testosterone to recover your sperm into your ejaculate. In about 2 years, it's about 96% of guys. So while it does happen, you have to understand a lot of times it takes a lot of time to do so. So the best thing to do is, if you are interested in future fertility, is to not take testosterone in the first place. And the other thing I want to highlight here, which when we say return of sperm to your ejaculate, we mean that there's any sperm. That doesn't mean return of sperm to the quality it was before. In fact, a lot of the data shows at best you're going to get to 85% of what you were before. And the problem then becomes, what if you had low sperm before you took testosterone? Because most guys come to us and they've never had a semen analysis. So this is something that, you know, is very serious. On the other end, it's one of those things where if you want to have a kid and you have low testosterone, we know that testosterone plays an important role in fertility. So we want to find a way to increase the testosterone in your testicle, which helps develop sperm without compromising, you know, your hormone levels in other ways. So the medications that Kevin mentioned are good options. Now, Kevin, can you just explain to our listeners really why, you know, I explained this idea that taking testosterone causes infertility, and yet if you have low testosterone, you need testosterone to develop sperm. So it sounds almost contradictory to some degree. Can you explain why exogenous testosterone kills our fertility?
All right. So I'm gonna try to explain to our listeners this hypothalamus pituitary gonadoaxis and try to simplify it as much as possible, because I'll tell you, as a med student, even as a resident, it can be a little bit difficult to understand. But so generally, you know, to try to keep it in simple terms, you basically got some instructions coming from the brain that are being sent to one other portion of the brain. Mm-hmm. And then these are sending out messengers that go out to your testis to basically tell the body, hey, make sperm. Hey, produce testosterone. And these two things happen in the testicles, all right? And so there's like a natural balance that happens. So once you make enough testosterone, once you make enough sperm, the body sends some agents back up to the brain and basically says, hey, you know, slow down, you know, turn that stuff off a little bit. We're good for right now, all right? So that's a very simplified way. And it's this natural balance. It's beautiful, okay?
Now, negative feedback, everything like that.
Exactly, right? You got negative feedback. And sometimes if you're not having enough, the body sends things that say, positive feedback. Hey, make some more. All right. So the body's interacting with each other, mainly the brain and the testis. Now, when you take testosterone, all right, whole, you know, exogenous testosterone, basically it's tricking the body into thinking that we have like enough, a lot enough. And as a result, this sends negative feedback to the brain and basically says like, hey, we got enough. Shut it off. Well, guess what? What happens when you shut it off? You're getting this testosterone that's coming from outside the body. It's not something that your body's making. And as a result, you're shutting down the production of sperm. So that's exactly what Justin was, you know, talking about, where, you know, patients who take exogenous testosterone, there's a percentage of them, a good percentage of them, that essentially have no sperm in their ejaculate because you've shut down this delicate system. And you know, these medications that we're going to talk about, you know, have an impact on this axis up and down and basically rev back up the system.
That's a great way of putting it. I think that was a really good description. Now, I think we need to go a little bit more in detail before we talk about these medications into the hormones that you describe that in that signaling pathway. So your pituitary in your head, that Kevin said, it makes two hormones. These are the two most important hormones you really have to understand. One is FSH, follicle stimulating hormone. Now that is the hormone your brain makes. It tells your testicles to make sperm. Now the sperm is made and then there's a negative feedback loop. Two, the second hormone your brain makes is LH, luteinizing hormone. And that's the signal that the hormone that is sent to your testicles and tells your testicles to make testosterone. Now, interesting thing about testosterone in that beautiful negative feedback loop that Kevin was describing is that in the periphery of your body, in addition to sending negative feedback as testosterone itself, testosterone, a portion, is converted to estradiol or estrogen. And that's going to be very important for some of the medications that we're going to discuss in terms of how they work, how the side effects work, and why you hear people take certain medications even when they're on testosterone. So this increase in estrogen happens when testosterone is converted in the peripheral parts of your body into estrogen. And that also has a negative feedback loop. So that is a beautiful cycle that Kevin had described. The problem then becomes, like Kevin said, when you have the T going to your brain from outside of your body, the FSH, LH gets cut off, your testicles stop functioning, they atrophy, the recovery process becomes long. And that's why most guys have A, infertility, and B, you know, when we tell people you're on testosterone, you're probably on it for life because it's sometimes hard, and especially the longer you're on it, to have your testicles recover.
That's an excellent point. That one thing that you noted there about testosterone being converted to estrogen in the periphery, super important. A lot of guys don't know that estrogen is present in guys. We got it, all right? And you actually have to have a decent level. There's a good study that showed that you need to have a decent ratio, you know, between them to still have good libido. So estrogen is vital in libido. So, you know, guys who are saying like, hey, I want my E as low as possible. I don't want that. You know, no, you actually need it at a delicate level. But, you know, Justin really put in a really good manner there the important hormones. And that's the one that you kind of really hear a lot about, LH, FSH, you know. Justin and I use this so often that we quickly say this. But those are the two things that, again, just rehashing what he said, FSH is important for sperm production. And LA is the messenger that tells your body to make testosterone.
So Justin, why don't we let's kind of break down each of these two kind of agents that we can sometimes use, and we'll kind of talk about the mechanism. So why don't you jump on the first one? Pick one and talk about it.
Let's talk with Clomid, because I think Clomid is the one that I usually start my patients off on.
Oh, team Clomid over here.
I'm a Clomid guy, and we can break down enclomiphene a little bit as well, because I think a lot of it's becoming a more popular medication. A lot of guys are coming in talking, and we were talking about this offline, that you know a lot of guys are asking for enclomiphene. I like to start my patients on Clomid for cost reasons, for easy access to it, easier access to it, and also just how it's
even
used.
Though it is getting a little bit more tougher, you know, there's still a lot of pharmacies which are still not carrying it, which is difficult for some of my patients.
So, you know, compound pharmacies, things like that have been very, very helpful.
Yeah.
We're not going to say any names because we don't have any sponsors. So that
for any of our listeners.
But, anyway, so Clomid is clomiphene citrate. And basically what it is, it's a SERM. And SERM stands for Selective Estrogen Receptor Modifier. And if you and how it's taken is it's actually taken orally. There's different ways to take it. Some people say, you know, every other day. Some people do it daily. There's no real standard. I think it's really kind of how you like to practice. Usually it's 25 milligrams and 50 milligram dosage is pretty much the standard dosages. But it is an oral medication. And basically how the SERM acts is it acts on that estrogen receptors of your body, including especially your brain. So Clomid, and we'll get into the difference between Clomid and enclomiphene, and Kevin will do a good job of explaining that because he's better at that one than I am for sure. but basically Clomid is signaling to the going to, attacking the receptors in your brain, the estrogen receptors. And it's basically saying, you know, stopping that negative feedback loop of estrogen, saying, okay, there's not enough estrogen, meaning that we can tell the brain to make more FSH and LH. So it's inhibiting the negative feedback and promoting a positive loop and creation of FSH, remember, to create more sperm, and LH to create more testosterone naturally, endogenously, by stimulating your testicle to work a little harder. So it's basically saying, hey guys, push. We're gonna maximize our own current potential. And you know, on average, you know, testosterone levels increase about 150 to 200 on this medication. Kev, tell me about the side effects of Clomid. What are things that people complain about? Is it a well-tolerated medication in overall?
Well, I'll tell you anecdotally, I would say most of my patients tolerate it fairly well. I don't know on your standpoint if that is, you know, some of the common side effects that can occur are, you know, some patients complain of headaches. I've had some patients complain of water retention or some slight weight gain. You can get gynecomastia, which is like some worsening of, you know, some breast tenderness or breast enlargement. Some patients complain of mood swings. Yeah, you know, it has its other typical medications like GI issues or vision issues. But I would say anecdotally, for the most part, it's generally well tolerated. I would say the few that have kind of come have just mentioned a little bit about the water retention kind of weight gain, but that's in the minority.
Yeah, I have a couple guys who complain of like hot flashes from the estrogen aspect of it for about a month, not the whole time. But I will tell you that guys who have been on testosterone, and this is just setting the expectation, and I always tell my patients this, if you've been on testosterone and we're putting you on Clomid, you're probably just not going to feel the same as you were on testosterone. Most guys, I just feel symptomatically, don't have that improvement compared to testosterone. Now, if you've never been on testosterone and you get a good response to it, a lot of guys do feel much, much better on testosterone. I mean, on Clomid, but there's no guarantees. I do often see some guys with improved semen parameters, improvements in their testosterone, and they kind of say they feel the same. But you know, if the goal is the goal, and if we're getting you where we want you to be, I mean, that's part of it.
Yeah, I think that's why there's also a lot of these studies that we see online where, you know, that are published at these academic institutions trying to see if, like, you know, do we achieve the same symptom response on a patient on Clomid? And, you know, to your, you know, where you pointed out, on average, we're seeing about 150 to 200 per that one published paper increase in testosterone. You know, I would tell you probably the delta is a little bit higher for my patients on TRT.
I agree. Yeah. Same.
So there's got to be some sort of association or maybe correlation, you would say. But the more T you have, generally the symptoms tend to improve more.
Absolutely. I agree. And that's, I mean, that's the bottom line. You're going to feel better if your testosterone, if you respond more. Now, Kevin, tell me the difference between Clomid or clomiphene citrate and enclomiphene.
Before we get there, I want to touch on something.
Okay.
Important things for our listeners, though. Clomid for use in men is off-label, all right?
Yes, very important.
Right? So Clomid is actually a medication that's commonly used on our female fertility counterpart side. Patients who are having issues with ovulation, that's like Clomid's actually indicated for it. It's a disease process known as PCOS, all right? That's what Clomid's indicated for. And it was like invented back in the 60s or 70s, sometime around then.
Yeah, I think it was like 50 years ago. Yeah.
And that's what it was. And it really changed a lot on the female fertility. Like some of these patients weren't able to ever ovulate. And now you give a medication where, again, it's very similar to guys. You're turning on all the hormones and basically pushing, like we're making sperm. That's helping them kind of help ovulate. But that's interesting, but that's important for our listeners to know, off label, right? This is not an FDA approved use of the medication. So as Justin's asking now, there's a N-clomiphene citrate is actually an isomer, or it just means a different structure, but in a very closely related structural class of clomiphene citrate. There's been a lot of talk and a lot of published literature that will suggest that N-clomiphene citrate actually, you will have lesser effects. So when we think about it, like clomiphene citrate will actually have some anti-estrogenic effects, and there is some estrogenic effects. And a lot of that's due to like these two isomers that are found in clomiphene citrate. I'm not going to get too much in detail on it. And it'll behoove me if I say I'm a, you know, very, very like high specialist in this, right? But
in terms of the
in terms of like the organic chemistry of it, right?
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
But it's been demonstrated there could be, you know, possibly some estrogenic effects that you can have with clomiphene citrate. In N-clomiphene citrate, you're having more of the anti-estrogenic because that's the only isomer that's found. And so there's been a lot of suggestion that, hey, maybe this is the more useful medication for men in terms of trying to help restrict side effects. Now, that said, Clomid is still the fundamental and more standard one that's generally used, but more and more N-clomiphene citrate is used nowadays. But that's kind of main difference. It's still an oral pill, and it's still something you either take like every day or every other day, depending on.
I think it's 25 milligrams, though, is the max dose. So instead, it's 12 and a half, and 25 milligrams is usually how you can dose it. The other thing that's important about these medications is they take time to work. This is not an overnight kind of thing. I usually say it takes at least a month to start seeing some kinds of effects. When I'm monitoring a patient on this, I'm waiting a month to check your testosterone levels, start seeing your effects at 6 weeks. You know, it can take, just like testosterone, some people don't feel an impact for a good 6 to 9 months is really the max far out. So it's just, you know, these things are not magic pills that help your problem overnight. It is a process.
Right.
And trust the process. It didn't work out for the 76ers, but it'll probably work out for you.
Now, here, let me step back and ask you, Justin. So in a patient with low testosterone, all right, I'm just going to give low testosterone and their sperm counts are a bit low, you know?
Right.
Like below, you know, 15 million per cc, right?
Okay.
Will this help them?
It should. There's no guarantees, but we do know that, like we said, you do need good testosterone right. levels, to have as efficient spermatogenesis or the creation of sperm as possible.
Yeah.
And we were talking about the study before. I think it increases your concentration by about 8 million
There's a good andrology mate analysis. We're getting a little into the weeds here, but you know, there's data
that shows. No, this is important.
Yeah, but there is some data that shows that there is an increase. You know, looking at a bunch of studies, they basically saw an average an increase in 8 million per cc sperm concentration. So for our patients who are lower than that 15 million, if you're just a little bit low and your T is low, this is going to show that it's going to kind of get it up above and improve your conception chances.
Yeah, and that's a big deal because, once again, we handle a lot of fertility guys, and oftentimes we're finding low testosterone in guys who have, you know, fertility issues. And one way we can really help improve their chances of conceiving either naturally or through IUI or through IVF is putting them on these kinds of medications. So you know, if you are interested in fertility, the other thing you should be doing is getting your testosterone checked, right? Like, so if you're interested in fertility as a guy, you know, this is something you should be doing. You should be getting checked out. It's not about just improving your testosterone and it's about, you know, and preserving your fertility. It's also about improving the fertility that you have if you're trying.
I love that. And that mixes up a lot of my patients where you actually need optimal testosterone for good spermatogenesis, right? For good sperm right. production. But that doesn't mean taking the exogenous T to get there. And that can be confusing. But and I think that's why we try to do these episodes, is to really stress that and really pound that point in where T is good for sperm production. But the T that you get from the outside really suppresses it. And so it doesn't help.
Yeah. Absolutely. So, I mean, I think we covered a lot on Clomid and Clomiphene. I think that, you know, these are, you know, very available, very, you know, a lot of doctors are providing it. Talk to your local urologist and, you know, something that if you're interested in, make sure that you talk to someone about and learn more. The next medication that we're going to talk about is actually HCG. And HCG is human human chorionic gonadotropin. Right. That's why we say HCG. So HCG, like Clomid, was also originally used for women. All of the medications we're talking about, this is off-label for men. None of these are going to ever be approved for FDA approved for men. But does that really matter? No. We know that they're safe. We know that they are effective. There's data supporting them, but they won't get approved by the FDA because, you know, there's probably no money in the approval because it's all generic stuff. So I think that's one of the reasons why you're going to say, okay, well, it's off label. But the one problem with being off label is a lot of these things, including Clomid, is not often approved by your insurance. And that's where, you know, when I'm deciding on Clomid versus HCG, and we can get into that at the end of the conversation, but a lot of it has to do with cost. And HCG, unfortunately, just is a more expensive medication. But Kevin, can you tell us a little bit about HCG, how it works, how we administer it, and stuff like that?
Yeah, absolutely. So the first big difference between HCG and Clomid is that HCG is an injection, right? You could do it mainly subcutaneous. You argue you could do intramuscular, but you know,
I've given it both, actually.
Yeah. It's an injection though, right? And that's number one. And in terms of how often you're injecting it, you know, some will say weekly, but it's generally like every other day. We're talking about like 3 times per week, 2 times per week. That's kind of dosing because of its shorter half-life. You kind of need that amount of repetitiveness in the dosing to kind of maintain some therapeutic levels. And the way that it mainly works is actually that it's kind of like an analog of LH. Now, remember what Justin said. LH is the main hormone that's sending messages down to basically tell your body to make more testosterone in the testis. HCG kind of acts as the analog and does the same thing, mimics this, and basically tells the body to make more testosterone. Now, what we really don't understand is that this kind of also helps with spermatogenesis, even though it's not directly turning on the FSH. But there is some sort of mechanism, and the studies have shown that there is an increase in sperm parameters with HCG. So that's the main difference, right? You got something that you're injecting yourself quite often, a few times, versus an oral medication. And we were talking offline before about, you know, why we use one over the other more often than not.
Yeah. And I think for me, it's cost. And a lot of people, to start at least, don't want to inject themselves that much. You know, people are still scared of needles. And I think that's a very reasonable thing. It's a harder medication to travel with. I get a lot of people asking me, how do I travel with all these needles if I have, you know, I'm going on business or stuff like that. So it can be a little bit of a hassle. Having said that, you know, I give HCG all the time still, you know, it is a good option. And, you know, it is a conversation that you should have with your urologist or your healthcare provider to see which one works for you. Now, when it comes to HCG, I think that there's two things that are interesting. Well, actually, Kevin, tell me, are there any specific side effects that people have when they're taking HCG?
I think, you know, it kind of, there's some similar side effects with when you're taking Clomid, but you know, anytime you're doing any injections, I always talk about patients with like site, and you know, just the area where the needle's going in, you can kind of have some irritation at that site. But you know, a lot of common ones, you can get mood swings, you can get the weight gains, you can still get the headaches. I do believe the one I do tell patients about is you may get some more like, you know, facial stuff. But again, in the overall scheme of things, it's still rather pretty minute in terms of the side effects.
Yeah, I think that once again, I think these medications are all very, very, very well tolerated, which is a great thing. And but the thing that I was going to bring up about HCG, which is really important or really interesting, is that, you know, and Clomid as well, is there's this idea, you know, you can combine these things.
Oh, yeah.
So often we have guys, and I see this a lot in South Florida, I'm sure in LA you see it a lot. I have guys who come into me, they're like, I've been on testosterone for 5-10 years. I want to have a kid. And, you know, I give them Clomid, they just can't respond. You know, and some of that is because, like we talked about, your testicles, after taking testosterone for so long, they can atrophy and they're just kind of burned out. They just don't have the support. So what do? We combo it. We can give you Clomid and we can give you HCG. Now, they often do work together because remember, the HCG is giving you an exogenous, meaning from outside of the body, form of LH to stimulate your testicle, while the Clomid is stimulating whatever, you know, you got left in you of the testicle to create more FSH and LH. The inhibiting factor here, though, is not your ability to make the hormones FSH or LH. It's not the LH being given to you by the medication HCG, or that I'm air quoting LH. It's really HCG. It's really your testicles' ability to respond to these medications based off of how long you've been on testosterone. And it's very hard to predict. I've seen guys who come back from it. I've seen guys who actually have return of sperm to their ejaculate, but they're not making good testosterone levels. And in those situations, unfortunately, if your goal is to have a kid, sometimes I'm giving you medications to increase your libido. I'm giving you medications to improve your erections until we achieve that goal. Now, that's not everyone, but you have to understand these are things that we can offer in combination.
Absolutely. It's for my patients who are on TRT and, you know, get initiated on the recovery protocol. I combo these medications. I do a combo of Clomid plus HCG. That's what I do. Pretty standard.
Yeah. Yes, that's pretty standard for me. That's what I do. It's usually 2,000 units Monday, Wednesday, Friday of HCG, about 25 to 50 of Clomid, you know, daily. We'll see how it goes. The other thing that I wanted to bring up when it comes to HCG is very interesting, is this idea of actually for both of them, is this idea of combining it with testosterone for fertility preservation, right? So there is a handful of guys. Yep. Who come to me, they said, hey, listen, I've been on HCG and testosterone for the last 5 years because I wanted to preserve my testicle size and I wanted to preserve my fertility. And sometimes they don't have sperm. And the other way too, sometimes they do have sperm. So Kevin, what are your thoughts on combining, I'm going to start with HCG and testosterone together in terms of fertility?
In terms of fertility. I mean, I see a lot of patients who
fertility.
All right. You know, that's tough. You know, I don't know. I don't think there's enough published data out there that shows that, hey, this is going to work. Because if it did, I think we would definitely do it, because you're definitely getting the improvement in symptoms on testosterone. It's just anecdotally, sure. I think we come across patients and we're like, wow, your sperm analysis is looking great. And you're on T, you're feeling great. Wow, you should consider yourself lucky. But more often than not, I just think there's inconsistencies, and I wouldn't be able to guide a patient appropriately and say like, hey, yeah, testosterone HCG will work. Testosterone Clomid, this is going to work. Honestly, I'd be like, hey, look, with HCG, sure, we have some data that shows that, hey, it kind of helps prevent testicular atrophy. You know, you can give that a little bit for patients who are taking T. But in terms of preserving the sperm parameters, I don't know. I couldn't sit back and say, or, you know, be safe.
I agree. I think in any capacity, if you're trying to preserve your fertility, you should not be on testosterone. Yeah. That's the bottom line. And, you know, there is some data, I think, out of University of Miami showing that it has the ability to preserve sperm for some people. But I guarantee you, I've seen it and you've seen it. I've seen a lot of guys who've been on both and it doesn't
We're not talking about the testo here. So. Wait, not intranasal.
No, I'm not talking about the testo. No. It was actually Ramasamy. I'm sorry. It was when he was at Baylor. Yeah. I apologize. It was out of Baylor. Yeah. Baylor study. I apologize. So, you know, can it preserve your testicle size? Can it preserve your fertility? Theoretically, it's possible. Is it a guarantee? Absolutely not. The thing that I have done, and I don't like doing this once again, is I have done this and it most of the time doesn't work, where I understand that once you're off of testosterone, some people do feel like shit, right? They just feel like shit, no matter the HCG, no matter the Clomid, because they have the burned out testicle. If I keep them on testosterone, I've actually kept them on HCG until I saw sperm in their ejaculate and they felt like shit. And I put them back on testosterone with the HCG because of, you know, it was shared decision-making. I warned against it. And this has happened multiple times. Most of the time the sperm goes away. So I do want you to just to be careful. That's not a guarantee that it's going to work, but you know, I'm not a fan of that process. If you're going to do it, I think you stay off of testosterone and you preserve your fertility as best you can.
So I'm going to interject and we'll say that there are a lot more options out there now. All right. That put a little wrinkle in some things, right? So sperm banking is a little bit more accessible nowadays. Okay.
Yes.
And so I have patients who I got them recovered, and 100% to the way you're describing, they feel like shit. They are like, I cannot see myself going, you know, 6 months and like, we're not even trying anymore right now, you know, and you know, what do I do? So I go like, look, again, I'm a fertility specialist like Justin, and I completely agree with what he says. You know, if you really want to, you know, maintain your fertility, you shouldn't be taking testosterone. That said, you can bank your sperm now and have a backup plan. Maybe your finances are okay.
Absolutely.
So sure, if you're like, well, I have a plan where I can utilize IVF and, you know, potentially conceive that way, there are options. And so that's why it's a tailored discussion now, you know, with patients.
That's a great point. But I think the highlight there, every time I tell someone that we're banking, which is fine. I agree. I do this all the time. I agree with you. I've done this many times, is you have to understand that if you are someone who's banking sperm, that sperm can only be used for IVF.
That's a good point.
So you're signing yourself up for $25,000 to $30,000, maybe more, maybe probably more, you know, and also, you know, who knows? So unless you have great insurance, unless you're in a state that, you know, covers IVF for one cycle. But in general, it is, you know, something that you can only do through IVF. So that's a conscious decision you have to make.
I did have a patient who had banked a couple, like quite a few vials and used it like all of them at once for one IUI.
For IUI. Yeah.
But I told him, I was like, hey, man, that's...
Did it work?
No, it did not work. And they, you know, unfortunately utilized, So,
yeah, that's rough. Now, one thing I want to get your opinion on, because I have a lot of patients who come in, and this is often, I've never heard of a urologist prescribing this, because physiologically, after the way that we talked about everything, and I think if you're a listener now, you understand, What are your thoughts on taking Clomid for preservation with testosterone?
I mean, it's like you're trying, you know, if you think about it from the axis standpoint, it just doesn't really, you have one thing that's trying to tell to turn off and you have one thing that's trying to turn it on. I feel like you're just going to mix your brain up and it's just going to get fried or something. I don't know.
No, that's not the answer. The answer is I think it doesn't work. I think the testosterone always wins, right? Like the negative feedback loop will always beat the hypothalamus. I don't think there's any data on this, but I think taking Clomid with testosterone makes zero sense. I think that, you know, you're trying to create an endogenous production of something that is already being blocked at a stronger level. So,
well, here, let me,
from my standpoint, I don't think it makes sense.
Well, let me argue with this.
I don't know.
That's let me argue on that. Yeah, but please. I'm not even sure if this is going to necessarily be right. But so you're taking a bunch of exogenous testosterone. That testosterone is going to turn to estrogen, right? It's going to turn to estrogen. Yes. And then you have Clomid, which is basically competing with this estrogen, right?
And the testosterone, though. It's also competing with testosterone.
Yeah, but the main areas that it's affecting on is these estrogen receptors and basically competing in trying to prevent them from being bound by estrogen to turn it off, right? Essentially. Okay. So, how are we to know that there isn't enough concentration of this medication to effectively competitively bind?
Would you give Clomid? The answer is, would you give Clomid? Ask the questions. Would you give Clomid with TRT? Doesn't make sense. Doesn't make sense to me. But Clomid with HCG makes more sense, doesn't it?
Sure, of course.
I mean, HCG with TRT makes more sense for sure. All right. So, I mean, it's just something that I have come across multiple times and I don't like that idea. I don't think if you're talking about effectively doing something with testosterone, I think HCG is the solution, not Clomid is my point. I do want to finally, I think there's one, well, is there anything else with regards to HCG and Clomid you want to talk about? There's one other medication I do want
to
bring up.
Before we leave these two medications, I think the one thing that I get asked a lot, and I think it'd be nice to share here, is everyone always asks me, what's the long-term safety data on Clomid? What's the long-term safety on HCG? And first off, I go like, hey, look, if you really want to know the honest answer, yeah, there's a couple out there that show, some data that shows it's fairly safe, right? I tell patients for the most part, it's fairly safe, but there isn't really good long-term data on this stuff, right? And the way I kind of tell patients, when you kind of look at it on the female side, they don't stay on it. They cycle through it.
That's a great point. That's a great point.
Now, that said, again, I think there was a recent abstract. I forget where it was. But I saw there was 8-year data. And I think the 8-year data, it didn't encompass that many patients in the overall scheme of things. But it showed for the most part, there was no adverse events. Keywords, adverse events. But we don't have 30-year data on it, right? So,
I mean, my stance is this, and this is what I usually tell people. If you have low testosterone and you're trying to achieve a pregnancy, I'm going to keep you on this medication until you achieve that goal. Now, so the good thing about Clomid and HCG and all these other things, as long as you're naive to any testosterone in the past, is, you come off of these medications, you just go back to your baseline where you were before. And that's something that we didn't mention before, which is very, very important, right? Testosterone, you become almost dependent on it the longer are on it. Clomid and HCG, you're no longer boosting your system. You're just going back to your baseline. So you're not going to drop. So that's a very important thing. So I have a lot of patients who say, hey, I don't like taking meds and I'm not really symptomatic either way. I'm going to take these medications, improve my testosterone, improve my fertility, accomplish my goal, and then stop it. until I want to have another kid again. And then when the time comes for some of these people and they say, I'm done having kids, then we just put them on testosterone. And that's also for symptomatic people, right? And I think that's the natural progression is we're going to keep you on these medications until you achieve your goal of fertility. And I think we all agree the better option in the long term is going to be testosterone once you get there. But until you get there, your goal is fertility. We're going to keep you on what you need. And if you're not happy taking meds in the meantime, then that's fine. I don't feel obligated to put you on something. But yeah, long-term for me, always for these kinds of patients who have low testosterone and if they're symptomatic, definitely long-term is putting them on testosterone once they have achieved their fertility goals.
Absolutely. Yeah, that's the exact kind of thing that I was trying to make the point of at the end. It's like, you know, I think Clomid very important during the fertility process if you have low testosterone. And but in the long-term scheme of things, I think, yeah, once you're able to achieve conception and we need to treat your hypogonadal symptoms, I tend to like to go with the TRT.
Yeah. Now, I think that was a good conclusion for those two meds. I do want to bring up one final medication, which is anastrozole, or these, you know, Arimidex is like one of the aromatase inhibitors. I do want to bring up aromatase inhibitors quickly because I think that they were very, very popular about 5-10 years ago. And we've started to, at least for me, I'm very, very conservative with these medications. I don't really tend to give them. But basically what these medications are is the 5-alpha reductase inhibitors. I mean, the aromatase inhibitors, I apologize. Aromatase is an enzyme that converts testosterone to estrogen. And so what we're doing is we're preventing that conversion by taking this medication. Typically, I give it about 1 milligram twice a week. Some people give it 1 milligram once a week. But, you know, the idea is that we're reducing your estrogenization in your body, that theoretically improves your testosterone. You know, and a lot of bodybuilders did this. A lot of people who used to manage testosterone used to put a lot of people on this because back in the day, the idea was you're a man, you don't need estrogen. We're going to bottom it out and it goes to zero. But we know that's not the case anymore. Kevin, you kind of described it before, but I just wanted to hear your thoughts on, you know, anastrozole and, you know, its impact and things it can do, or, you know, whether you give it, how you give it, what's the setting you like.
Yeah, I think there was a good actually Twitter or X, whatever you want to call it, discussion on it, because a lot of times as urologists, when we inherit patients who are coming in from getting TRT, whether it's through, you know, some off market place or, you know, a lot of them were coming in on Arimidex, like every single patient, no matter what, they're yes. on anastrozole. And I will tell you, when I start patients, you know, we're kind of getting a little bit away from fertility, but let me just talk in just general about like,
right.
when I start patients right. on testosterone therapy, I don't, like, that's not part of like the medication I give right off the bat, because like I was alluding Same. To earlier, estrogen is important for libido. And I told a guy once, I was like, hey, your E is bottomed out because you're on like so much Arimidex, like that's why your libido hasn't improved potentially, you know. And
correct,
so a lot of these guys, I do like this big reset. I'm like, all right, let's go back to the drawing board. You know, if your body is just kind of all whack again, you need a good level of E in your body. Now as urologists, sometimes we do these funky like, oh, is your testosterone to estrogen ratio, is it greater than 10, is it less than 10? And that kind of sometimes helps dictate us whether we want to start on anastrozole or not. That's like whenever I kind of, that's part of my like kind of algorithm process. Mm-hmm. But in general, I don't use it unless it's, I'm seeing these kind of, you know, like too high of an E level, or again, that TDE ratio is not where I want it to be. So that's kind of how I use it. I don't know if you do the same thing, Justin.
No, I do the same exact thing. The TDE ratio is very important for me because, you know, one thing that people, you have to understand, we just explained the physiology to you that if you improve your testosterone, you're inherently going to improve your estrogen levels. It's just, that's the way it goes, right? More testosterone, more of it is converted into estrogen. So more doesn't necessarily mean bad. It can cause symptoms like gynecomastia, breast development, all that stuff, but it's very rare. I've really not seen much of that if you're at therapeutic right. levels. Now, The other thing that, you know, Kevin mentioned is the libido aspect is very important, because a lot of guys come see us because they have low libido, which is the main reason that is like one of the most sensitive signs of having low testosterone. So, you know, if you bottom them out, you're not really helping that. The other thing that's important for estrogen is bone health. So, you know, a lot of these guys, they want to go to the gym, they want to get better, but, you know, bone health is also a very, estrogen plays a very important role in that. And that's something that we also want to think about. So I'm usually very hesitant to do aromatase inhibitors. The one exception, and this is why I brought it up for this, is that I have started giving it more frequently for fertility. There has been some studies coming out recently showing that an aromatase, we don't really understand the physiology or the pharmacology of why it happens, but there is some data suggesting that, you know, temporarily putting people on aromatase inhibitors while they're trying to go for fertility or improve their semen parameters can actually improve their semen parameters. So, you know, it doesn't improve the testosterone in these studies. It did not improve testosterone levels. It only improved semen parameters, and it's not a guarantee, but there are some populations of people where it has helped. So I have temporarily put people on aromatase inhibitors. And sometimes if they have low testosterone, I'll also put them on Clomid. And that's one of the few combinations that I will put in, and that's one of the reasons why I wanted to bring it up today. The goal for Rimadex really in those situations is for fertility improvement, not really testosterone improvement.
I agree. For me, it's hard for me to kind of grasp around, again, what you were touching about, the mechanism of action of why that improves. But, you know, in the realm of fertility, there's just still so much gray knowledge where we don't have an understanding. And that's just a reality.
Yeah. And I think part of it's counseling. When I start someone on that, I say, listen, here's the side effects. You know, you could have low libido, you can have bone joint aches. Those are the kind of the side effects of, aromatase inhibitors, but you know, I'm not going to keep you on it forever. There's a chance it may improve your semen parameters. So we'll keep it on you for at least, you know, 6 months probably, and see if it works. And if it does, great. We'll get our goal and then we'll stop. But if not, then we stop it. So, you know, I think counseling is a big part of that. And now I'm not saying that every person out there every urologist is going to be comfortable giving you that medication for that purpose, and nor should they. But there are some things, if we're trying to think outside the box, and, you know, because sometimes, you know, you're born with the way your sperm is, and sometimes we just need to try to figure out a way to optimize it. And maybe if I can give you a little bit of a better chance, I'm going to.
And on that point, I think counseling is very important. You know, my mentor, my fertility mentor, Dr. Ranjith Ramaswamy, he'd actually talk a lot about, or these paradoxical effects that sometimes would happen from taking Clomid and HCG, right? Yeah. Sometimes you take the Clomid and for some reason your sperm parameters get worse, all right? Again, counteracts, again, a lot of this what happens, but in some literature, it will show that there is a paradoxical effect. So again, I really counsel my patients. I'm like, hey, look, data is really pretty good. That shows this is going to improve your T, improve your sperm parameters. But again, fertility, we don't fully understand it. And in some patients, it just doesn't work the way we want it. So, but.
I think it's a really important, really, really important, because medicine's medicine. It's, you know, there's science to it, but we still can't explain everything. And unfortunately, we can't predict the future on any of these things. But, you know, we take the data, we take our knowledge, and we try to give you the best opportunities to, you know, achieve your goal, whatever that goal may be, when you sit down and talk with us, whether it's fertility at that time, whether it's just to preserve your fertility while increasing your testosterone and feel better. As you heard in this, there's a lot of different ways you can go. There's a lot of different ways in which we can treat you. So, you know, the most important thing you can do is go talk with your doctor about these options, because, you know, you can't do any of these things unless you talk to with your doctor. And if you're thinking about going on the black market to get all this shit, I'll tell you, guess what? It is, who knows what you're getting. You know, this, it's just the bottom line. You want someone monitoring this stuff. You know, I always find that somewhat ironic. You have all these guys who are buying stuff off the black market who care about their bodies clearly and care about their health, and yet they're not going to a credible source to get the supplies that they're interested in. So that's something that there's that paradoxical effect in another way in my brain often.
100%. I think that's well said. And I think that's a great way to end this very informative episode, in my opinion.
Yeah, I think it was great. I definitely enjoyed talking about this. And I think it's a really good summary of all those options that we have for improving your testosterone, preserving your fertility, or potentially improving your fertility as well. Any other comments, Kev?
Nope.
All right, let's rock and roll. Thanks for listening, guys. As always, subscribe to our podcast on Spotify, iTunes, Prime. Always appreciate it. Check out the YouTube. Our cameras are live. They're good. We got new thumbnails. We're looking hot now. You know, we're changing up the clothing. So, you know, we'll wear different stuff now. Unless Figs wants to sponsor us or some other place, shout out to them if they do. Would love that. That's about it. You know, check out the site. We're updating the site too, Kev, right?
We're going to make it a little bit easier for you to kind of be able to browse the different videos we have, try to, you know, search for them. And, you know, it's just such a fund of knowledge there. So we just kind of want to try to help be able to make it easier for our listeners to find them.
All right, guys. So for Kevin and Justin, thanks for listening. Until next time, have a good one.